This is Radio Influence.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour. I'm Casey Oxendine, alongside the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Of course, we go over everything Valor Fights, as well as the top news in mixed martial arts across the world. Of course, tonight, it's a big recap for Valor Fights 41. We will have Dylan Kala, Kobe Wall, Luis Pena, Chase Boutwell, and Jason King all here with us on the line tonight. But before we start, I've got to say what's up to Tim Loy and of our special guest, Alan Poole. He is a staff writer for Valor Fights. He is here with us tonight. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. I'm excited. I've been pumped for this episode because I wanted to kind of run down the card. I usually do like an after event, like Facebook Live thing, but now I'm just being kind of save it for this, and people can just listen and get our recap and reactions here. It was an awesome night, man. We haven't had a crowd that Saudi Daisy was pretty close actually, but like it was still just an awesome night. It was an awesome crowd, and the fights were great. We kept a good pace. We didn't keep everybody there as late as I had as I was afraid that we were going to, so our pace stayed good. We didn't really drag it out too much. We had a couple little issues with some fans, but those were diffused fairly painlessly, and overall just a great night, man. It was big thanks to Joey Carrier with the Evolution Sports. He was a very good host, and we enjoyed working with him there. And man, great crowd, man. As Gorilla Monsoon would say, they were hanging from the rafters.
Well, you're exactly right. I thought we'd be out of there by at least 2:30 or 3 in the morning. We ended up, finishing up around 11:30 because of the beautiful knockouts and submissions that we saw earlier in the night. Alan, man, yeah. It's great to have you here with us. You're a guy that's really an integral part of Valor Fights, between the photography and between the special articles that you've done. Of course, part of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Man, what did you think of this big extravaganza of Valor Fights 41? It was a 21-bout event. What's your take?
Well, first off, I want to say that before I even got to the fights, I got into a fight with a dog, and it bit me all up. I didn't care. I did not care. I was so excited about going to these fights. I was in so much pain. Every time I had, I was holding my camera, just pushing the button was excruciating. But I didn't care because I was having so much fun, and I was so excited to be there. And man, it's awesome. And now, we all got to experience that. I got to write about it, get to know the fighters, and then here we are. I love it. I'm thankful to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, of course, it all kicked off with our first fight of the night. It was an amateur MMA bout in the featherweight division. It was Roger Artrip taking on Chris Barnett. Of course, Roger, we've seen before. Chris Barnett, a guy that we hadn't seen in a while, fights out of JCMAA there with Brendan Bohannon. He took a tough loss to Hunter Thomas in his first fight, but man, really rebounded strong here in this fight, finishing with a big submission. Tim, what did you think about that bout?
We got two finishes in our, this is one of two dark matches. And, as we always say, get there early because you're going to get a couple extra matches that you won't see on the broadcast. And, sometimes those turn into some great fights, and you'll catch some prospects. And, I thought Barnett looked good. He was dominant. He took Archer right down and just started pounding on him and got the TKO. And he evened up his record and got to 1-1. 1 after having a very tough debut against Hunter Thomas, and then he hadn't fought for over a year. So very, very dominant performance from him. I would imagine he didn't take any damage and would look to get back in there pretty soon. I'll have to get back in touch with him and see. But he would be a good candidate to maybe add on to that 50-50 show we got coming up. As for Artrip, you know, he's got to work on his takedown defense. You know, he's in a region where there's not a lot of gyms up there for him to work with. But right now, he's being just taken down at will, and you know, that's got to improve for him to you know, get back on the horse and get a win somewhere.
Well, Tim, you're exactly right. Tremendous fight to kick off the night. Fight number two, you know, it continued with that, even more so, in fact, because there was a little heat there. Austin Kurtz taking on Billy Two-Tone Combs. It was Boone, North Carolina versus Mountain City. I picked Billy Combs in this one. I think maybe Mark had picked Austin Kurtz going down. It was Billy Combs who finished it. What was your take?
You know, those guys, yeah, there was a lot of heat there coming in. It looked like they may have squashed it there at the end, but, you know, Billy came in 10 pounds heavier and looked, you know, he looked like he, you know, maybe hadn't trained as much as he should have here for this fight, just, you know, we're speaking freely. Austin, on the other hand, had been training with a group out of Boone. And, you know, I think it was just the size actually played a part in it. Billy got on top and Austin couldn't get out from underneath him. And Billy worked finally to the side and got a head and arm submission. And, you know, congrats to Billy still, though. You know, he needed that win. It's been a minute since he's gotten a win. Now he gets back in the win column. I think that was his 7th win. I think he goes to somewhere in the realm of like maybe 7-11, something like that.
Man, having such a relationship with Billy for so long, and really he's done so much. Of course, he worked in staff, and then he's also really stepped up last minute for a lot of these fights that have fallen off, and he's very valuable to the promotion. What does it mean when you see him get a victory? You know, because he'll take a few losses, but when he gets a victory, it's a big deal for him. And I mean, what does it mean to you to see him get the win?
Yeah. I mean, we love Billy, man. Billy's been around in many different capacities over the years, and you know, good guy, and can wear many hats on the show. So you know, he's been anywhere from the dark matches here to main events. So you know, he's been all up and down the card. He's filled in on late notice for us countless times. So it's always nice to see him get a win. Get a morale boost there after taking some losses, and you know, so it's always nice to see Billy get a win. He's definitely a friend of our promotion for sure.
Well, very cool. Of course, the third fight of the night was between Matt the Canadian Johnson and Clayton Summers. The Canadian under Suzanne Ramsden at Maverick Training Center, a black belt in BJJ. I had a few words with her that night, of course, formerly under Elio Seneca, currently an Atos affiliate. I mean, those guys really know their way around the ground, but Clayton Summers coming off a huge head kick victory, knockout victory. It was a war, you know. I mean, it was an older guy in his mid-20s taking on the youngster in Clayton Summers. It was old school that prevailed in this fight.
Yeah, man, Matt Johnson's like the best 0-2 fighter in the world. he must have been fighting some killers because he looked awesome out there. And, you know, just great takedowns, and smothering top pressure. And Clayton just really couldn't get anything going. You know, he couldn't stop the takedowns. And I felt like he might have been just a little too comfortable off his back, you know, to just try to fish for something. But, you know, Matt Johnson wasn't having it. And, you know, defeats a very, very, you know, promising young prospect in Clayton Summers. So congrats to Matt and congrats to his team. I was definitely informed of the affiliation change, and I made sure they knew that we would not make that mistake again. And as for Clayton Summers, I'm sure he will be right back to it. Didn't look like he took too much damage there, and I'm sure he learned a ton.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And of course, you know, it's been, you know, 2 years essentially since Matt Johnson was in the cage. So much growth that could happen there. And Clayton, you know, a kid, like you said, that, you know, the amateur career is all about learning and growing, even from those losses. So exactly. I'm very excited to see Clayton back. Fight number four.
Would you say, before you go on, would you say, like, for a kid like that, like a loss? like that is surely worth more than two wins over turds.
Well, it's certainly stunning. You know, when you take a loss, it's something that shakes you up, and you know, with youth like that, you have so much time to grow. I think that the loss is going to be very, you know, productive for him, and you know, to lose to a guy like Matt Johnson, regardless of the numbers. I mean, we talk about it all the time. The numbers mean absolutely nothing when you stand across the cage from another individual, another man. You're fighting that man. You're not fighting those numbers, and that's what a lot of people fail to realize. And you know, you even see it in the higher levels. You see it in the UFC, where guys, you know, have been, you know, losers, you know, for a long period of time, and they're expected to just be a gatekeeper or a walkover, and they make a big stir when they win. You know, guys like Alistair Overeem, even, who a lot of people counted out at a certain point in his career. So I think that, yeah, you know, really the growth right now as an amateur, I think it's going to do a lot for Clayton Summers, and it's certainly going to do a lot for Matt Johnson, who really looked great. Now, of course, bout number four, we're going to speak to him later in the evening. Chase Boutwell with a big victory over Charles Chandler, who stepped in at the last minute, fighting out of American Top Team in Asheville. Both of these gentlemen fighting out of American Top Teams in their respective cities. Of course, Chase in Macon and Charles there in Asheville. Tim, very well-matched fight, considering you put that together with less than 24 hours to go.
Yeah, I can't thank Charles enough for stepping up there at the last minute for us. We lost Milloway at the last minute at weigh-ins. We were informed that his grandfather had passed, and he wasn't going to be able to make it. And so we got to scrambling, and you know, that's what we do. And we were able to pull it off. We got Charles to come out here that night, the night of weigh-ins. And like I said, I can't thank him enough for stepping up. And I'm sure, I know that Boutwell and his group was very appreciative as well, because, you know, this was a very long-awaited MMA debut for him, you know, as a guy that's been around the circuit already for several years and finally turning 18 and getting to go full-on MMA. It was a very long-awaited thing for them. So we were glad that we were able to keep that together. And he looked good. You know, Chandler came out and got a big slam early. And he got a triangle, and you know, Chandler slammed. He slammed him more than once. It seems like he got a couple big slams in the triangle.
Well, I was going to say Chase got a couple of triangles, because he did initially get the triangle choke and get slammed out of it several times. And that was what made it so interesting, because this last minute change had to shake things up a little bit for Chase Boutwell. This is a kid who essentially is you know, a very pedigreed competitor. And so you make a last minute change like that to you know, with a guy who is known for his wrestling prowess. And then he comes out there essentially delivering the one tool that he had over Chase Boutwell, and that is being a slam master. And it was very entertaining, extremely entertaining fight. In the end, Chase Boutwell used his technical precision to win the fight and finish off that triangle choke. But I think the crowd was very elated with that fight.
Oh yeah, that ended up getting our submission of the night. And I think more than anything, just for how tenacious he was to hang on and finally finish with that after, you know, being shook out of it over and over and just hanging on to it. It was awesome. And, you know, he moves to 1-0, and, you know, now he's actually going to be competing, in the UMAF tournament coming up, at the end of May. So it'll be really interesting to see how he does, against, you know, competition from all over the nation.
Absolutely, competing as a bantamweight in this fight. And speaking of which, the next bout was a UMAF semifinal qualifier bout between Josh Cumby and Tevin Brown. Of course, I believe that Josh Cumby, we have seen Tevin Brown previously, of course, the nephew of Quentin Rampage Jackson. But Josh Cumby, this guy really was a breakout character in this show. Of course, ended up taking knockout of the night in that fight and really making a tremendous showing for himself and Icebox MMA there in Rincon, Georgia.
Yeah, he's let me know that it is no longer Icebox MMA. It's SMD, self-made domicile. That's the word to refer to them from now on. But yeah, man, he's very impressive. I wasn't familiar with him at all coming into this, and Jared Williams with Conflict is, I guess he's kind of, I don't know if he's like really managing him so much, but he's kind of guiding him in whatever form or fashion. And you know, he kind of set this up for him and spoke very highly of him, and he was just a class act all the way around. Very nice guy and very powerful, man. He hit a big KO over Tevin Brown, who was coming in undefeated at 1-0, and you know, that fight was back and forth all the way to that point. Tevin certainly didn't have a bad showing. It was it was a very good fight to that point. I think he had a takedown at some point, and Josh landed and he hits hard, obviously, and he was able to really measure him up for that second one, the big knockout blow. And congrats to Josh, man. He had a successful Valor debut. We enjoyed having him, and now he'll move on to the regional final here to fight Bright Benson in Newport in April, and the winner of that will have that 185 slot at the national championships, and that's going to be a good fight.
Absolutely. Alan, what did you think about Josh Cumby, man? The fight, knockout of the night recipient.
Man, well, I had been following Tevin around a little bit over at Kings MMA because they're only a couple miles actually from my house. So, I was familiar with him. The power that he possesses, I was definitely impressed with that. I was not expecting him to carry that much power. What was it? The overhand? Is that what connected? Does anybody remember?
I believe it. I feel like it was maybe an overhand ride.
It was like a thud. I mean, I'm just kind of going by the memory there. That's what I remembered. I remember standing up, being like, "Oh man!" Like it was a solid shot. It was very impressive. I was impressed with him. I look forward to seeing what he's got in the future.
Well, most definitely. Bout number six, Charles Philpott versus Jordan Owenby. Of course, I had Charles Philpott. He was the undefeated prospect, former Apex Fights champion.
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Casey. It was a left hook.
Left hook.
It was a left hook. Okay.
Something hit hard.
All right. Well, like I said, Charles Philpott, Jordan Owenby, and again, Charles Philpott, a former Apex Fights champion, undefeated. But man, Jordan Owenby just looking on point. Man, was able to get the takedown over the pedigreed wrestler in Philpott, and deliver a very, very solid performance in that stoppage.
Man, Owenby, he was kind of, he'd fought for us once before, but he was still kind of a mystery to me because, he fought in Knoxville last April in one of the dark matches. And honestly, I don't feel like I was there at the cage watching those early couple fights. And so I hadn't really clocked him into my mind live yet. And, I kind of half-assed watched his fight on video, but man, we talk about Philpott being the pedigreed wrestler. Come to find out, Owenby's the higher pedigree. He wrestled at Davidson in North Carolina, so he's the higher pedigreed wrestler, and he pretty much, man, it was pretty dominant, really. I mean, Philpott tried to implement his game plan and just couldn't get anything going at all. That said, I know that Philpott had a really rough weight cut. He was sick and was almost having to go to the hospital for fluids the day before. But that said, not to take anything away from Jordan. That was a very dominant performance. He looked great. And he was to move on to fight John Hall in the finals for the UMAF spot at 205. But the day he let me know that he had a cut on his foot that was pretty bad, that he was going to keep him out of training. And so he's not going to be able to do that. So we're back on the search for a suitable opponent for John Hall.
Well, that's not an easy surge, man. John Hall, he's been putting people on ice like crazy. I'm excited to find out who finally steps up for that one. Fight number seven, the former, a teammate of Philpott and the former Valor Fights featherweight champ Doug Achilles Williams taking on Homer Mangrum out of Rush MMA, and this was a tremendous back and forth battle. Of course, the pedigreed wrestler in Doug Williams making the push for the takedown and keeping the drive forward, whereas Homer Mangrum, man, what a stature in this guy, one of the largest featherweights I've ever seen in my life, coming out of, again, Rush MMA and American Top Team. Tim, what was your take on this fight?
Man, that was, I think Mangrum was a bit of a mystery, as we talked about in our preview. We really just didn't know what to expect. We knew he was going to be solid coming from Bubby's team, and we just, that's a given. And so, but, you know, we didn't really have, you know, much else to go on, but he is a specimen. He is a huge 145. He's got good wrestling himself. You know, he's put together, and man, I look forward to seeing what this guy can do. You know, I think a lot of people were kind of expecting Doug to have never a walk in the park with Bubby's guys, but you know, just from the streak that he's been on and the wins he's been racking up, and he's just been so hot. I think people made him a pretty heavy favorite there, and he just couldn't do what he couldn't implement the game plan that he needed to implement. And, Mangrum got the decision, and a decision I agreed with. And, come to find out, Doug had a broken nose. A couple of people told me, so that may have affected his cardio, and I would have to imagine it did, and his ability to train leading up, because I've never seen Doug fade, you know, ever. And in the third round, for the first time ever, I saw him look he was breathing harder. And, now it all kind of comes together, you know.
Well, and that being said, you know, Homer was, Doug really from the start, he made that push forward, and Homer was the first guy I've ever seen that Doug had a difficult time taking him to the mat.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, with, you know, that's the thing, man, when it comes to that clinch game and that pressure game, it can be a double-edged sword. Making that press, if you get the takedown, then you're going to be in control and you can rest and you can chill and you can get in the right spots. But at the same time, if you have to continue to work to even hold on to the guy and try to take him down, it's going to really push your cardio. And if you're having any sort of health issues on top of that, it's going to be accentuated. Tremendous fight. I really enjoyed it. But props to Homer for coming through with that one. He is a future star in Valor fights. Our next bout was
Casey, sorry. I want to get your take on just something that just is not necessarily just this one case, but just kind of overall. Yeah. In this, you know, after this fight, you know, I was talking to Donnie Ward, who's kind of handling the Bushido guys now over there, and as far as the MMA end of things, and the talks were essentially, you know, should Doug go pro? In the plan, if you will, before this fight was for him to go pro, and he kind of just stepped up and took this fight last notice just to kind of stay busy, because he's been sitting for a minute, and he's, you know, he's the kind of guy that wants to stay busy. You know, would you, every situation is different, I guess, but, you know, in general, would you advise going pro off of a loss, or do you feel like that's negative momentum, or, you know, do you kind of, you know, read between the lines in this case and realize that, hey, you know, we had some injuries, yada, 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 or do you want to make sure you're going in on a positive note?
You know, Doug has
not just his case, just kind of like overall.
True. Well, just in general, I mean, but looking at Doug, you know, he was on an 8-fight win streak. You know, he was 1-4 when he started his career, went on an 8-fight win streak, vacated his title, which I don't know if that deflated some of his momentum. But, you know, as an amateur, I'm ready to turn pro. I've made this decision. I'm going pro. Wait a minute. I'm going to put this little last minute fight together, and I'm going to go ahead and jump in there. And it wasn't against some bum. I mean, it was against a legit pedigreed opponent, possibly the toughest opponent he's faced as an amateur here in Valor Fights. I think it just all depends on, you know, that's going to be his coach to make that that call. It's, you know, Donnie and Eric. I really can't make the call because I don't know enough about what's going on with him. I think if he turns pro, I don't think that he's going to be a scrub by any means. I think that he could, you know, potentially be ready to roll with it. I mean, a Homer Mangrum is the style of fighter that he might expect to face as a professional. So, you know, I'm not saying that he should rule that out. It could have been a tough night for him. At the same time, if he's questioning himself and doubting, it might be best for him to go ahead and continue that, you know, that learning experience of the amateurs. It's really up to him. But again, if he does choose to go ahead and make that push to pro, it doesn't mean that he won't be successful. Tyler Minton, one of my guys, actually lost to Jesse Grun in his last amateur outing, went on to be 8-1 as a professional. So sure. I don't think that it should be out of the you know, the realm whatsoever, I think.
And another thing to keep in mind, and I talked to Donnie about this, was, you know, once you get up to the level that he's at with the record that he's at, anybody that I'm going to be able to find to fight him as an amateur is going to be, you know, on that pro level.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, here in Valor Fights, and I'm not just blowing smoke right now, but, I mean, essentially the top-level amateurs, you know, could kick the crap out of a lot of you know, median-level pros in a lot of organizations. You know, so many professionals are carried along in the early stages of their career, and like I said, it's a breath of fresh air to see the level of amateurs, and when you talk about having an all-amateur fight on a Valor Fights card, you know that the last, you know, out of 15 fights, the last 10 of those are going to be barn burners. They're going to be really, really tight fights. So let's go ahead and move on. You know, bout number 8, it was one that, you know, obviously I had a close watch on. It was Preston Schick versus Thomas Woolley, the champ, Thomas Woolley, in this Valor Fights featherweight title fight. I'm going to, you know, leave it up to you guys because you got to watch it. I experienced it. You know, yeah. I was there, you know, calling it out, and I wasn't on commentary for that one. I was doing my own form of commentary there in the corner.
Are you saying you're a little biased?
No, I was a little biased in that fight. I was hoping the press would pull it out. But at the same time, you know, much respect to Thomas because we had worked so hard leading into this fight over the past year to get Preston a tough fight. And it seemed like every time we get something set, they would pull out. And truly, as a coach, you know, as I've evolved as a coach, the biggest thing that I've seen is that as an amateur, I need to put pressure on our fighters, you know, once they're experienced and put them against that tough competition. Win, lose, or draw, they're going to grow from it. And especially in a situation like that turned out, of course, Preston took the decision victory. It was very close, but that's the best situation that he could have. Whether he had won or lost that decision, he grew tremendously, and I'm you know, thankful to Tim and to Valor Fights and to Thomas and his team for taking that fight. Tim, what was your take on it?
Man, it was you know, it went very, very much like I think a lot of people kind of expected it to go. You know, I knew that Thomas was going to be, you know, the had the size on Preston, and I kind of assumed that Preston was going to have the striking advantage, and that's kind of how it shook out. And it was very close, and there live, you know, with a flask and a half of Woodford Reserve in me, I definitely had 100% had Thomas winning that fight hands down, you know. And but, you know, at the same time, you know, it kind of is a perfect example of, you know, A, the judges all have different viewpoints. They all have different perspectives. And B, you know, you don't always necessarily know exactly what a judge is watching for. This is like one of the most debated, you know, judging issues that there is. Just, you know, control versus damage. And after I got home and watched the flow, then, you know, the flow broadcast where I could see all the angles and, you know, have a perfect perspective of it all. You know, I had Preston winning the fight. I had him win in the second and the third rounds in a very, very close fight that could have went either way, just depending again on what you, you know, what it is you, what's your flavor, you know. Some people prefer that the guy that is, you know, that has the other guy pressed against the cage and controlling him there in that dominant position. However, some judges prefer the guy that is, even though he has his back to the cage and he is being, you know, controlled, he's still working. He's still throwing punches. He's still trying to fight. And, you know, in that particular fight, that, in my opinion, was the difference in the, I thought the first and second rounds were pretty clear cut. First round for Thomas, second round for Preston. The third round was very close, and Thomas had the cage control for the bulk of the round, but just really didn't do anything with it. You know, I would have to go back and count, but I don't. You probably could easily count the amount of strikes that he tried to throw. Definitely on two hands and maybe one hand. I'm not sure, but he did keep that. He did keep that position for such a long part of the round. You know, so I definitely could. And in that being said, that's why live I thought that he won. You know, but after I was able to kind of watch it all, Preston landed the more significant flurries and actually did the more damage. And so it was very, very close fight. Both guys will grow from it. I'm a huge fan of both guys. Love Thomas, love Preston. And it's a good thing for both of them to go through that. And, you know, as amateurs, that's definitely going to be a fight that they can look back on and adjust their game plans moving forward.
Yeah, well, yeah. We're already watching. Alan, you followed Preston. You've seen him.
Yeah, I love that guy.
In his last few fights. Did you enjoy the fight?
Oh, yeah. I always enjoy a Schick fight. I love his attitude. I love that. You know what? I was just thinking about this. He looks so unassuming to me. Like, when I first met him, I was like, oh, it's Team Oxendine. I was like, okay, cool. All right. Let's see what he can do. He looks to me like he's on his way to becoming a dentist. You know what I mean? Like, he does not look like the stereotypical fighter. But boy, when he gets in there, he's a salve, man. He's going to finish the fight, right? He's like, bang, the you hear the bell, he's going out to finish. He didn't care how, but he's going in you know what I mean? Like, you're getting a good fight. You're getting a good show with Preston. And I think that was the deciding factor for him. I think that kind of showed through that he was doing everything he could. Like, he wanted to get free so he could bang it out or do anything other than just be held. And I think that, to me, what it looked like was, I think that he was trying to grind Preston down, but I think what ended up happening was he would kind of, you know, he would just kind of hold on there, but it wasn't really advancing. And I feel like it kind of showed that Preston did indeed want to do something. And if he got free for a second, he could do some serious damage. And I think that's, I guess, what the judges saw as well. But it was a very close fight. And I respect to both fighters, very classy fighters. And, I don't want to take anything away from anyone. It was a great fight.
And I can totally see Preston as a dentist.
I told you, right? If he had the white coat, he had the white.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the, came up with like, thing. I'm telling you.
Well, again, one more time, a big shout out to Thomas and Stryker. That's one thing. You know, you can debate the decision, but you can't debate the fact that both of those guys stepped up to fight the toughest guy that they could find. And to me, that takes the cake there. And so, win, lose, or draw, as long as it doesn't cost somebody a chance at the UFC, they're the amateurs. All I see is a lot of great experience. So, props to Thomas. Good luck in his future. And, you know, we're excited about what Preston's got coming up as well. The next fight, of course, was a UMAF National Qualifier Final. It's one we had really anticipated. The Honey Badger, Shane Schaffner, taking on Jacob Clemens, who was also the Valor Fights flyweight champion, and he was defending that belt as well. It was Jacob Clemens in his well-rounded skill set that prevailed. But what a fight, Tim.
Yeah, it was good. We knew that I felt like that would be a decision fight. I knew that both guys were going to have a really hard time finishing the other. And, Preston, again, was just a little too well-rounded. I think just his saltiness, he's a seasoned kickboxer and his you know, has been working on striking for just a lot longer and had the wrestling to negate. And you know, it was mainly a standing affair, you know, and, you know, Clemens just really sharp. Schaefner looked good too, you know, very tough opponent for both guys. And without a doubt, their toughest opponent each to date. So, you know, props to Jacob, very impressive. And he will move on and get our slot at the national championship. And I think he could make a run. What do you think?
Well, I think so for sure. And you know, really, it was very close in the first round. You know, they kind of collided. You saw Shane Schaffner hopping around a lot more, moving a lot more, whereas Jacob Clemens took the center of the cage. And as things started to unfold, you started to see Clemens really coming on. And yeah, by the third round, he really took over. Schaffner, of course, still there. What a chin on that kid and mm-hmm. what legs and everything else, man. Whatever Clemens threw at him, he was willing to take it and come forward. But in the end, Jacob Clemens did what he had to do. He proved himself a true champion, and he moves on to be a representative of Valor Fights and UMF Nationals. Yeah. Very exciting fight. Alan, what was your take on that fight?
Well, again, he's a Kings MMA guy a couple miles from my house. So, yeah, you know, I'm checking in on that guy. And so I've been watching him spar, you know, leading up to the fight several times. I'd say at least 4 or 5 times. And just watching him work on the some holes in his game and in his stand-up. I've seen him duking it out with Nick Gertz. You know, he's taking on – he's sparring with people that are going to make him better. And the maturity, the difference between – was it Apex 12 that – he fought, I can't remember which, whenever I think I saw him at Apex 12.
It was 12 in September when he fought in Knoxville against Wright for the belt.
Yeah, his fight IQ has doubled since then. Once he hit that third round, like you're saying, I could see the maturity from the last fight to this fight, where he knew he knew the cardio that he had. He knew, like, if he landed a couple shots, not to go crazy. He would kind of step back, gain his composure, pop, 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 you know. He was just a much more mature fighter. I was, like, I made sure I grabbed him after the fight, and I was like, man, you know, like, whatever you're doing, it's working. But he, to me, is like one of those fighters that, you know, I'm watching him in practice, but I feel like he needs a little extra pressure, right? He needs a little extra on him. He's one of those guys that if you put more pressure on him, he sharpens up. And that's what I think happened on Saturday. I was really impressed with – I really think he's stepped up his game. I think he's taken it serious.
Well, again, of course, Jacob Clemens continuing on as the Valor Fights flyweight champ. Go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything about the other fighter. Man, he looked good too. He looked great. It was a great fight.
Well, cool. And then, of course, Jacob Clemens again moving on in the UMAF Nationals. So excited for that. Now, next fight was another UMAF National qualifier final, and the Valor Fights heavyweight championship. And of course, we've seen Big Sexy Billy Swanson up and down the roads everywhere you could imagine. He advances to 7-1 in his amateur career over Kelly the Pain Train Payne, who really, you know, came out of nowhere. You know, he was a character who scored two big nasty knockouts, but really was just unable to negate the pressure and the wrestling prowess of Billy Swanson. Tim.
Yeah, it was a major step up for Kelly there. And, you know, hey, props for him for being willing to jump in there with a guy that a lot of guys don't want to fight right now around here. You know, Swanson's a real deal, man. And, you know, I think he's another guy that I've got a real, you know, now he moves on to the tournament. And, you know, it's another guy that I've got a lot of faith in to make a good run, you know, to maybe even win this thing. So, you know, he showed just the superior wrestling that we talked about that I felt like would be the difference in the fight. Kelly wasn't able to land standing and, you know, pretty quickly was taken down. And, and eventually submitted in the second round. So, you know, nothing to hang his head about. He's still definitely a young prospect, up and comer, and that took a major step up in competition early.
You know, I have to ask, what's next for Big Sexy? You know, I mean, he's pretty much cleaned out the heavyweight roster in Valor. And then what's next for the Pain Train, Kelly Payne, man? Because, you know, that being said, I mean, he's lost to the best guy on the roster, and he did it, that happened due to the wrestling. And, but that being said, a lot of guys won't be able to take Kelly Payne down. And if they can't, then what?
Yeah, you know, Kelly is a very heavy-handed guy. You know, there's no doubt if he puts those paws on you, then he can put you to sleep. So, you know, Billy, I'm not exactly 100% sure what his plans are, but I would imagine that if he has a nice run in this UMAF thing, he will probably turn pro because he has pretty much cleaned out the cupboard here. In around here, I'm not saying there's no one willing to fight him, but I'm going to have to reach out, pretty far at this point to get somebody to come in to fight him. There ain't nobody local that's going to fight him. Alan, no one within 3 hours, I would venture to say.
Alan, are you a big fan of Big Sexy?
Huge fan of Big Sexy. I love everything he brings to the table. Him and Chandler Cole have the highest level wrestling that I've seen, like, up close and personal and watched. His technique is flawless. And he's fun to be around. He's a character, man. He's Killer Bees up there in Cleveland, Tennessee. I've visited a couple times. I love all those boys. They crack me up, actually.
It's a pretty good little stable of heavyweights they're starting to gather.
Yes, it certainly is. But I wanted to say one thing about Billy before. I just wanted to get this out there. Billy beats his opponents before they ever step in the cage. He has them so rattled before they even get in the cage because he pisses them off so bad on social media and gets all his fans. He causes almost like a Conor McGregor type stir, and he gets under their skin. And I can see it in the eyes of his opponents. At least I believe that I can. They have this extra pressure on them that they have never had before. And Billy specializes in that and his wrestling.
Billy's got that perfect shit-eating grin.
Yeah.
I've never said this before. Tim, you know who Billy reminds me of?
Who's that?
Arn Anderson.
Oh, yes.
Yes. He's a character the same way. Yeah. The same swagger and everything. Bout number 11 was also a UMAF National Qualifier Final in the lightweight division. It featured a very contrasting set of styles here in Jonathan Ace Mooneyham, a guy we've not seen in a very long time, but a veteran nonetheless, taking on Keith Olson, who is really a pedigreed striker as a lifetime Taekwondo student, but really has come on strong with his ground prowess. His submission skills are tremendous. What was your take on this fight?
We didn't really know what to expect from Mooneyham coming back from so long on the shelf. But, I think that once the fight hit the ground, we all pretty much were pretty confident that it would be all Keith. The main, hurdle I felt like would be could Keith stand up to the pressure of Mooneyham in the initial onslaught, in which he did. And, Mooneyham overcommitted a little bit, got in too close, and gave up the takedown fairly easy. And, it wasn't much longer after that.
Alan, what was your take on the fight?
That is basically the exact same assessment. I don't feel like I can really add or take away. I wish I had something really cool to say, but I don't have anything cool to say.
Well, Keith moves on to the finals, into the national tournament.
Yeah, he'll be in the tournament.
And it's going to be a deep, deep division there. Of course, lightweight is one of the deepest in mixed martial arts. And Keith, he's faced some tough competition. He's bled already. He's shown that he can, be put under pressure and he can fight back. What are your thoughts about his chances here in this national tournament and how he'll perform?
You know, I have no reason to think that he'll perform anything other than great. You know, he hasn't had any any real issues with anyone leading up to this thing. And so, you know, he hasn't lost at all yet, you know, so he should be headstrong going in. That said, it's very, very deep. I mean, this is probably the 155 is generally one of the deepest divisions there is. And so it's going to be some very tough competition, but I feel like Keith can certainly have a good showing out there and hopefully make a good run. I think, like I said, he's headstrong. He hasn't lost yet. He hasn't learned how to lose. So, that's certainly going in his favor. And, he's on a roll. You know, he's hot. It's not like he's just fought like one time and he's running out there. He's kind of come back from a pretty long layoff and gotten active. And so, he's starting to get some momentum.
Well, the next battle of the night, number 12, was the amateur main event. It was another doubleheader. UMAF National Qualifier Final Bout and Valor Fights Welterweight Championship Bout. It was Steven Stevens out of Shield Systems challenging Bubba Bad News Cruz, the champ. And this one was full of fireworks.
Yeah, man. That was, That was a really big step up in competition for Stevens, and finding a guy like Cruz who has already been in there in some big fights and it was coming off a loss, so he was motivated. That said, Stevens had always like kind of stepped up to the challenge and had been in some compromising positions in the past and always just kind of like gutted through him. But, Bubba hit a very nice submission here that, got the win in the first round. And now he's got a slot also in that tournament coming up and, shakes the loss to Yemi Oduwole that he had in January off and will go in with some positive momentum.
Alan, what is your take on Bad News Cruz?
He's probably one of the most beautiful human beings on this earth. Him, his wife, and it looked like a one-day-old baby that had a full head of hair.
That baby is gorgeous, dude.
I have a picture of that baby.
My wife, Jennifer, she stopped talking about that baby.
I've got a really good picture of that baby that I stopped and just was staring at it. Just like, that's the most beautiful baby I've ever seen. They're all beautiful. They're like supermodels up there. I don't even know what happened during the just kidding. No, I know Steven. I call him Double Steven or Steven Twiced Up. I'm a huge fan of Shield and Ben Harrison. And, he trains with Dahmer, but I would like to say that, man, he does not like to tap. I've seen Dahmer do some terrible things to him, and I'll be watching. He's like, is he out? No, he's not out. So. Man, I don't know, man. I wish that he had tapped a little sooner, that he wouldn't have gotten hurt. I know that he got dropped right into a terrible position. I glanced over at his corner, and I just saw a subtle glance from his coach, Ben Harrison, over at Shield. It was just like, oh, shit. And it was over shortly after that.
Well, and that finish, that is a Bubba Cruz specialty. I've seen it a few other times, quite a bit in submission wrestling, but in MMA, there were a few guys that I knew actually utilized the Americana by scarf hold, where essentially you lock the arm inside your close leg from the scarf hold position or side headlock position, and you crank up on the head, and it's very effective if you know how to do it right. Tim, you'll remember Josh Buer. Josh Buer was, a tremendous innovator for using that here in our region. And, yeah. Bubba Cruz is really, I mean, it's like the third time he's finished that. So big props to him. Big props to him maintaining that, keeping the title and moving on to do big things in the UMAF tournament. I think he's grown quite a bit, tremendously. The next fight, was the start of the pro card and really ended up being the fight of the night. We got fight of the night honors, and really it was one that touched the heart of a lot of the fans, but particularly us, guys that know Roy so well. Roy Real Steel Sanders taking on Brandon Glass. Roy 0-11 going into this fight. This was a Cinderella man kind of moment, and it wasn't an easy road for Roy whatsoever. Three, hard rounds. He gets the finish there in the third, and looking like Rocky Balboa. Tim, what's your take on this, man? Give some love to Roy.
Man, Roy is one of my favorite people in this business, man. Roy's Roy, me and Roy, we go back, man. You know, when he was an amateur, and I was just starting to kind of come around this whole scene and, you know, writing articles and things like that. He was one of the very first guys that I talked to, and, you know, just a good dude, humble, and, you know, has fought some killers, you know, and throughout his illustrious career. And, you know, we wanted to get him a fight that would be, you know, competitive, and that he would have a good chance to go out there and get that pro win, you know, that has eluded him, you know, till this one. And, you know, Glass didn't give it up easy, man.
No, he didn't.
You know, he made him earn it. And I think that was kind of what made victory so sweet for Roy, is he did go out there and earn him a win.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you could see it in his face, you know, like he knew that it didn't come easy, and it was very gratifying. And that's what earned him what he got. Now, Alan, I don't know if you'd seen Roy before, but no, what was your take on the fight?
Well, the thing that I really took away from it, I don't want to take the spotlight off of him and on Glass, was that Glass was not made of glass at all. He was made of steel. He took shot after shot after shot and just kept coming, kept fighting. There's no quit in that kid. I know that he lost, but he earned my respect. He was another one that I made sure I grabbed. I was just like, man, you are one tough son of a gun. And I don't want to take anything away from the guy goes 0-11. And he still doesn't get an easy. He's not getting easy. He has to earn that thing. And much respect to him for basically punching a what are those things called? An anvil. That's what I felt like. That glass is not glass. He's anvil.
Well, you know, Casey, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, I'd say people, you know, just kind of looking at this fight, assumed that we had something that was going to be a layup for Roy, you know, and it ended up not being that, man. It was a good fight. It was competitive. And had it gone to a decision, I don't know who would have won.
Well, I definitely had Roy up the first round. The issue was that Roy got in the right spots real quick. He got that triangle choke. The problem was that Glass had one of those necks that he was unable to really secure the choke, and, you know, Glass was tenacious. He didn't just give up. And when that happens, all of a sudden, it's kind of like Apollo Creed's coach there in the corner saying, man, this guy thinks it's a fight. You know, we know it's a show. He thinks it's a fight. And it was the same thing with Glass. He comes out there and he thinks he's supposed to win. And because of that, he made it very difficult for Roy. But in the end, Roy did finish with that triangle choke. Huge props to him. Yeah, and really, it was
great job.
I had a tear in my eye throughout the whole thing. He played the whole good, the bad, the ugly, and came out in the poncho and stuff. I mean, it was really a great showcase and a great night for him, and he deserved it. Huge props to him. Now, the next bout of the evening in the lightweight division was another one that was interesting. Latrell Perdue, and I was going to say Dondada, but the last minute they changed the name, and I don't even remember how to say it.
Was it Garjo Grill?
Whatever, I don't know. Whatever, you know. I mean, Latrell Perdue, always an explosive kind of character. Took on Slick Nick Gertz, who is, as his moniker claims, he is very slick. Yeah. Comes out with a calf cutter submission, something that garnered him a highlight reel on Flow Combat and will probably be watched for a long time on those little viral clips and so forth. Very cool finish. A good addition to the library of finishes by Slick Nick Gertz. Tim, what did you think about his performance?
Yeah, you know, Nick came out and put on a show. That was kind of their goal, you know, is to go out there and put on a show and get, you know, Nick hadn't fought now in a while. And so they were, you know, I guess, man, has it been a year? Has it been a year since Nick had fought? April, I guess. Is that right?
His last fight was Stephen Haig, right?
I thought it was new. In April.
Oh, it was new. Yes, it was. Yeah. It was back at Valley Fights 32. Yeah.
So it'd been a year, you know, since Nick's fought. He had the fight with Hicks fell out, you know, on fight week. But, you know, they were looking to go out there and put on a show. And, And win impressively, and they did. You know, had a very rare submission, and there were some theatrics and whatnot in the lead up, and you know, fun fight.
I want to tell you something. I want to say something about Nick because
me too.
You know, just outside of this, you know, I've never really, you know, he's never been to the gym and worked out. And, you know, a lot of guys cross train and everything like that, and we've had a lot of guys that come to our gym and train and everything, but he's never done that. But I held the New Dimension Grappling Tournament, and you know there are a lot of politics that come into anytime you hold any sort of event. You know this, and so some of the guys in the regional area were down for it, and some weren't. And when I contacted Nick, you know, he was like, "Hey, put me in the super fight. Put me in the two. We were going to do a two, you know, team thing, and it was going to put him and his brother. And he's like, put us together and put me in as many matches. I'm going to support you any way that I can." And, you know, for somebody that, you know, I've known through Valor fights, but not really had a lot of interaction with, it really went a long way as a person, the way Nick is, because he's a character. You know, he can be kind of sassy, if you will. But when it comes down to it, he's a real good-hearted person, extremely. Yeah. And, yeah, of course, he lost his mother this past year, who was there at the tournament. She was a huge supporter. It's a really, really heartbreaking, you know, to hear that she passed on. And just, you know, just my personal thoughts on Nick. You know, I mean, huge thanks to him for, you know, being who he is, man. Because again, you know, a lot of people might get the impression that he's a, you know, like an arrogant kind of guy, when in reality he's true blue.
Yeah. Am I cutting anybody off?
No, go ahead.
Okay. No, I think Slick Nick, I think he'll be in the UFC. If anybody could get Dana White to pay attention to this kid, right? Just look at him. He's got it all, man. He's a good-looking kid. He's his jiu-jitsu is sick. His stand-up is sick. He moves around almost like Dominique Cruz does, if he feels like it. He's whatever he feels like doing. He's like he's a mystery. You know, he'll fight orthodox. He'll fight southpaw. He'll just do his own thing, whatever that is. And like, he can do whatever he wants. I mean, he manhandles people in training. I'm not going to call anybody out that I've seen him do it to, but it's pretty much everyone. I really do see him going to the next level. I can't say enough good things about that dude. I just like watching him. He's entertaining. I mean, he's everything that you would want. I finally got, I've seen him spar a ton, but I finally, you know, got to see him with my own eyes, see him fight. You know, he belongs in that cage, man. I cannot say enough good things about Slick Nick. I hope he gets his shot. Well, actually, you know what? I mean, I'm kind of selfish, man. I want him here in Valor. But, I love that dude, and I hope he does move on.
Well, again, big props to Slick Nick Gertz on that victory. And, of course, on to our next bout. It was a catch weight at 180 pounds, and it was the grudge match of the night. Everybody knew it, and it didn't even start with the fight. It started earlier in the night. I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to let Tim cover what he wants to cover of that portion. But Aaron Lee versus Judd Brown, and it turned out, you know, I mean, there was a huge buildup, very, very brief and explosive finish. Judd Brown with the knockout victory, the knockdown and the TKO finish. What an explosive situation all the way around. But man, you know, that's part of MMA. Tim,
man, this was one that they kind of made the fight themselves. You know, these guys have beef going back for years, I guess, and there was a lot of tensions between both sides. Fans, they didn't like each other, and it kind of was one of those roller coasters. And getting Aaron licensed, you know, I had to really make, you know, like, work, you know, to make sure that we got all that kind of stuff done. And once we got his license done the week before, I was starting to, you know, breathe easy that this thing was going to go down with no hitches. And then, you know, we had some weigh-in day stuff, you know, where Aaron wasn't able to make it for the initial weigh-in. And then we had to reweigh the next day, and he was still over, and we had to do some purse swapping. And, And then I thought we were surely good. You know, surely we're going to move on with no more hitches. But, you know, at that point, we had more altercations during the actual event where I heard that there, you know, someone was spit upon, you know, and so we thought that we were going to lose the fight at that point, just with them being, you know, ejected from the building and leaving on their own accord, you know, and somehow, some way, we were able to keep them both in the building and the fight went down and, you know, Judd, it was a savage, you know, hit a nice head kick and then finished him off with brutal elbows from Mount and, you know, kind of settled the score. And from what I can gather, maybe the beef squashed now. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know.
You never can tell with Aaron.
Yeah, it's really.
You know what I mean?
It's a roller coaster.
I will say this. When I came in Sunday morning for open mat, the guys that were in attendance for the fights, the first thing they said was, "What's up with that Aaron Lee Judd Brown fight? What happened there? What's going on?" And you know, in between all of that stuff, you know, and I'm just being real because that's what the Valor Hour is about. You know, we said that before, but you know, Shane Goins comes up to me and he goes, you know, in the middle of all this, right? You know, between the amateur and pro side, and he goes, "Aaron Lee's back in." You know, so he's going to fight. And I'm like, well, that's good because I didn't even know he was out. As far as I knew, he weighed in earlier in the day. But it was so much in and out. You know, apparently there had, you know, like you said, there was some crazy altercations. And, you know, bottom line, there was a little bit of an altercation after the fact. But it is what it is. It, like you said, it squashed. It made a scene, but you know, it happens in this sport. And in the end, you know, everybody went home safe and it was what it was. Alan, what was your take on the situation?
I didn't realize that the beef was between those two. I honestly didn't. And I may have actually worded my little post a little bit differently if I didn't know I didn't realize that that was what the beef is. I know it went on behind me. I was buried in my camera trying to do some stuff. And then all of a sudden I was like, "Hey, what's going on back there?" And I didn't know it was between those two. So when I first met Judd a couple weeks ago, I didn't remember his name. So he's got that Cabbage Patch face, right? He's got the huge smile. So what? I don't understand. Does he talk smack? Were they talking smack back and forth, or is it the camps that were talking smack?
I think it's a Rogersville thing.
I feel like I just want to pinch his cheeks, give him some milk and cookies, man. That's what I see when I see him. Until he got in the ring, and those elbows he dropped were so ferocious. It was like it makes me cringe even thinking about it. I mean, do you guys remember hearing those thuds?
It was tremendous. All that being said, and then we'll move on. I want to say this though, and this is to anyone, any of the fans that are listening, you know, any of the teams, any of the competitors, whatnot. Bottom line, you know, there were a few little skirmishes that broke out. When it's done, it's done, and from now on, that needs to be that way. And you know, it's one of those things where it's cool that, you know, people care about their friends and they want their guy to win and they may be upset. But ultimately, Tim Loy and any promoter of any event that you go to, they put a lot of money into these events. And the fans, they spend a lot of money on those tickets. And there's a good chance when something crazy happens out in the audience, the police can just roll in there and they can shut the whole thing down. And what happens? Well, then, you know, the fans don't get the fights. Oftentimes the promoters have to give back money and all kinds of crazy stuff happens and it affects, you know, everyone's livelihood. And it's not going to happen, you know, and it won't happen. And that's the thing is that you have to have a zero tolerance. And like I said, I just had to address it because
yeah, you did a good job.
It's part of what it is, you know. And you know, everyone did their job the right way. And you know, so fans, when you come out, enjoy it. And you know, when you lose, you know, just like if you lose a football or a basketball game, you know, your favorite team. You know, you take the loss in stride, and that is what it is because we all live to fight another day. Now, next fight, a very highly anticipated one. You know, we were anxious to see the Asian persuasion Jason King back in action. He took on David Suderman Suter in a tremendous showcase. It was ultimately those short elbows from the clinch that did in David Suter. Jason King advancing his record to 4-2 with a tremendous win.
Yeah, man, Jason looked good. Suter was diehard on that takedown, and he wasn't really going with any other direction but that. So, you know, he paid the price for it. He ended up eating a lot of really rough elbows, and, you know, Jason King gets back on the horse.
Alan, you know Jason King very well.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I know him real well. He has he's one of the first people I rode with at KMAA, and he proceeded to tap me multiple times, very quickly. I can't say enough good things about Jason King as well. I mean, he conducts himself like a professional. You will not see him do any of that junk we were just talking about before. That is the difference between, in my opinion, you've got people that don't really want to get to the next level, right? They must not be interested in getting to the next level if they're going to be spitting on people. Or acting that way. I don't want to keep getting into that. I'm not trying to be negative, but I'm saying here's a stark contrast between someone like Jason King. He is a consummate professional. Follow him. Be like him. Don't be like thugs that are going to get in you know, a gang war. I'm sorry. I'm a little angry now that I realized that's what that was over. I don't want, you know, like, that's why we can't have nice things, guys. All right, conduct yourselves like professionals. Okay, I'm gonna shut up now.
Well, tremendous win again by Jason King. We're going to speak with him later tonight, so we'll get much deeper into that fight then. But again, huge congrats to one of the top stars in Valor Fights. Now, our next bout was a pro welterweight fight between Nick Overblood Martino, the Karate Man, but so much more. He took on Sean Barnes, who was, you know, undoubtedly one of the top prospects in Valor Fights, still is. However, he does drop the loss here. He came out very aggressively in the early goings. But during a judo throw, you know, Nick Martino was able to transition to his back, secure the rear naked choke, and take it home. Tim, what a tremendous turn of events there.
Yeah, man, that was two guys that we knew would put on an exciting fight. And, you know, Shante was doing really well there and went for that throw and didn't secure it. Nick came out on his back and was able to, you know, take advantage of that position and get that finish with the rear naked choke. So it's back to the drawing board for Shante. He didn't have a bad performance, not a bad showing at all, but couldn't pick up the win. And congrats to Nick Martino on that first pro win. Well deserved, man. I'm happy for him. He's a good guy and been around with us for a long time.
Yeah, I'd known Shante for a long time. Of course, he's worked some with us. Started with Eric Jordan, who was, you know, of course, a close friend. Now he's head coach there at Bushido. But he, you know, that being said, Nick Martino is one of those guys who's really put in the work, and you can't not respect him. And it's very difficult not to like him. You know, I mean, in just an enjoyable fight, you watch all of these fights, and even the ones he's lost, you know, you look at him and you go, man, that was such an exciting fight. It may not even be because of the guy who won. It was because of Martino, you know, and that's just one thing. You got to, you know, scar tissue across his eyes and across his nose. He is a true fighter. Huge props to that guy. Our next bout was Kobe the Great Wall and Kid Chaos, Zach Cook. Now, Kobe Wall, a tremendous prospect, a national level prospect. We're going to speak with him later tonight. But man, Tim, you know, we knew what he was all about. We had heard about what he was all about. But seeing him there firsthand, I mean, he systematically dismantled Zach Cook with precision.
Yeah. I'm a fan for sure. We'd heard a lot about him, and it was exciting to finally be able to get him on a card. And he definitely delivered, man. He was everything we advertised. Very, very well rounded, very technical, and pretty much dominated that fight, man. And improves to is he 5-0 now? Is he 4-0? 5-0.
4-0 now. He's 4-0. He was 3-0 going into the fight, so he's 4-0. But I mean, I guess more than, you know, that would be his 16th win, his 16th straight win in mixed martial arts competition between his pro and amateur careers. So, yeah, that's that tremendous, tremendous win there. And you know, again, just by the way that he did it. Alan, I know you enjoyed the fight, yeah. Right?
Oh, absolutely, man. That was a great fight. And another guy that you could look to as a professional, if you want to conduct yourself, if you want to follow someone, if you want to be a fighter, conduct yourself like Mr. Wall, the Great Wall, because he is great. He's fundamentally sound. He, in my opinion, kind of has the whole package, and the whole package is continuing to grow, and he's going to continue to get better because of his attitude, and he is a professional, and he's smart. I can't wait to see him fight again.
The next bout was a catchweight at 225 pounds between Philip Rumble McLaughlin and Chandler the Hammer Cole. This is a matchup I'd been waiting to see for a long time. A lot of people remember McLaughlin just for, you know, putting people on ice. He has a lot of heavy lead in those hands. He really a tremendous knockout artist. But Chandler Cole, just on another level. We talked about that wrestling before, able to get it to the ground at will easily and just dismantled Philip McLaughlin, you know, readily, like quickly, you know. And I've never seen McLaughlin go down. It was his first loss in 4 years. Tim, what kind of ceiling does Chandler Cole have? I don't see one.
Yeah, man, he just gets better every time. And, you know, that was a fight that he just dominated. And, you know, I think just the additional training that he's getting at this point, going down there with David and those guys, is really just paying dividends. And, man, sky's the limit, you know. He definitely needs to keep his weight under control, I think. But I think he's learning those lessons as he goes. And, yeah, very impressive.
If he keeps dancing... Oh, yeah. Like he dances.
His intro.
You're gonna see it. I mean, he had a great intro, and he was bragging on that intro on social media. I read about it, and I was like, well, that was all right, you know, but the dancing is what really turned the crowd on, man. And yeah. Tim, I think you've got yourself an entertainer there.
Yeah, man, he's certainly a character. He's got a great charisma, personality, and you know, fans love him.
Alan, your take on Chandler the Hammer?
He's got it. That it factor, whatever that is, you're going to love him or you're going to hate him. You're going to come watch him fight because he's entertaining and he's good. His wrestling is solid. Him and Billy, I've watched him and Billy wrestle. They are high level wrestlers. He is a big future.
Well, we're down to the finals, man. The co-main event of the evening, big pro matchup. At 155 pounds, the guy that really is this region's one of the top prospects, Damir Fahadbegovic, taking on Luis the Beast Pena out of St. Charles there in Missouri. Two guys in their respective regions that were top tier. Round one was all Damir, but man, coming out into round two, Luis turned things around. He scores that triangle choke victory. What a fight, really. It was one that had me on the edge of my seat. I picked Damir to win. I met Luis 2 days before he came into my gym and to cut weight. And I really got to know him, and I got to really become a fan of him just by, you know, his character and the way he carried himself. I think he's a huge star in the making. Not to say that Damir is not going to continue to do huge things as well, man. Great showing for himself, but man, Luis the Beast is, you know, he's something else.
Yeah, that was, you know, that fight was one that we were all very, very excited for. And, you know, Damir came out there, looked great in the first round, was tagging it with some good punches. But, you know, Luis, we weathered that storm, showed a great chin, and second round took advantage of, you know, what looked to be Damir starting to fade a little bit. And, you know, Luis with a very big win, made a lot of fans out here. And I'm sure Damir will be back stronger than ever. He seemed like he was, you know, not injured or anything like that, and ready to jump back on. So congrats to both guys for a great fight. And I see both guys doing very big things.
Well, we will speak to Luis later tonight, and we'll get the firsthand account of that experience. Real quick, we need to close out this recap with our main event. Chris Wright taking on Dylan, the future Kala. Of course, Kala highly, highly touted as one of the next big stars of mixed martial arts. But Chris Wright, he did not fade into the darkness easily. He came to fight and really, in my estimation, controlled that first round, kept the pressure on Dylan Kala, defended the takedowns very well. But man, once Kala came on there in the second, it was all the future. Man, it really controlling in rounds two and rounds three. I call him quicksand. It seems like every time he gets on top, he's able to control. The guys melt underneath him. Chris Wright going the distance, but taking that loss. Tim, what was your take on this big main event?
Oh, wow, man. It was a great fight and a lot of hype coming in on that one. Chris looked great in the first round. I agree with you. Took that one. And then Dylan just kind of kept coming on stronger and stronger and kind of figured him out there. And like you said, just the pressure was just, too much. And he was able to just kind of keep that grind on Chris and comes out with the win, and we're proud to have him as our champion. He's going to be a good one, man. That kid is definitely special, and a lot of potential there. And Chris Wright, like I said, didn't look bad at all. Fought well, fought a tough guy, and Chris always fights tough guys. So I'm sure he will be back better than ever. I saw he's already posting; he's right back to it. So congrats to both guys for delivering a very solid title fight there.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead. Well, that being said, funny, you should be talking about Dylan Kala. We have him here on the line. Dylan, the future Kala, is with us. He's the first guest of the evening. We're going to touch base with him on this fight and go from there. Dylan, it's great to have you here tonight.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing, man?
We're doing good, man. Glad to have you.
What's up, man?
Not much, man. Just hanging out, man. Kind of resting up and enjoying the fruits.
So, man, he was a huge buildup, of course, with Chris Wright. Chris is a guy that's known for talking the talk. He came out there in the first round and really delivered. He stood in your face. He was able to negate some of those takedown attempts. But, man, rounds two and three were all Dylan Kala. What are your thoughts on the fight and, how are you feeling today, man? Are your legs sore, anything sore, or are you ready to get back on that horse and keep rolling?
Yeah, man, Chris was very good. We knew Chris was experienced. We knew Chris was going to be tough, and, he definitely he showed up. He put on a good performance, and it was definitely tough. Judging from if you watch the fight, I watched it on Flow, and from the commentary, it kind of sounds like it looks like kind of having a hard time. But if you watch it, I pretty much control I control the cage most of the time. I threw a kick in the probably about 2 minutes into the first round, and my knee blew out on me. So I wasn't really able to move in and out like I wanted. On my feet so much, so I kind of had to adapt and stay a little more still than I wanted to, but I just switched it up a little bit and was able to make the changes I needed to. So it wasn't a big deal. I came back and I sat down the stool in my second round, and Jeff just kind of looked at me, and we both kind of knew that my knee was I messed my knee up a little bit, but we just knew I was just gonna have to tough it out. We made a tacit agreement to just tough it out and put him on his back when he needed to, and staple him to the ground. And that's what we did.
Now in the fight, would you say, it had been a while since anyone had seen Chris fight? Did he do everything kind of what you expected? Did he do anything differently? Were there any surprises?
No, I mean, like I said before, I didn't really watch too much of Chris's. I hadn't really watched many of his fights or anything. I knew he was, knew his experience. I knew a lot of his fights that were online were just from a long time ago. So I just, I didn't really watch much of them. I know he trained at a good camp, trained with good guys, man. So I knew he was going to be good. I knew it didn't really make sense to, it didn't make sense to prepare for, those videos, because I knew he was going to be better than that. And he was, he was really good. And he was positionally sound. He didn't freak out in positions where a lot of guys do. And, you know, stayed calm and, you know, kept myself in the game. I was I wasn't as aggressive as I like to be. I usually play a much more open guard, or much more, you know, open on my grappling and kind of scramble a little bit more, but I just wasn't able to with my legs, so I just had to kind of adapt and staple them down and, you know, land short shots when I could. So he did a good job of staying in there and, you know, was able to take minimal damage. And, you know, really until that third round, I wasn't able to do too much damage to him. But I've slowly felt him. You know, it was slipping away in the third round, but I just wasn't able to pull the trigger for him.
So, Matt, go ahead. You are the Valor Fights Bantamweight Champion now. That is a big deal. We're very excited to see you back in action as soon as possible. What's up with the knee? Have you had anything? Have you had it looked at? What's going on there? Is it something where you just tweaked it and it's going to need to heal, or is it something deeper?
Yeah, it popped on me in that first round. I threw a body kick and it kind of just it popped on me And then I ended up moving the second round. I ended up kind of like in that inverted leg lock position, and my leg was just popping and cracking in there. So I knew I had messed it up pretty good, but I'm just waiting on an MRI right now. But it's feeling better. I mean, I'm able to move on. I'm walking without a limp, so I think it's hopefully it's nothing too bad. You know, we'll get an MRI just to make sure, but hopefully it heals up pretty quick. I think I'll be back on it pretty soon.
So
I've had some prior knee problems before, and I don't think it's anything the same. So I think I'll be good going a couple of days.
So looking back on the fight, what would you know, I know you guys try to take something from every fight, you know, and build on it. What would you say? What did you do that you weren't happy with? What did you do that you were happy with? And what would you say overall? What did you gain from this fight?
You know, I was able to go out there and open up a good bit. You know, I wanted to open up the game, you know, completely and slow me down a little bit because of my knee. But, you know, a lot of my fights have been pretty quick, you know, and they've been, you know, pretty controlled. So, you know, it was good for me to go out there and, you know, I was able to spend some time in the cage and kind of had to battle through some tough positions because of my knee. And, you know, it was good to get that experience. You know, Chris was it was tough, you know, so I, it was, you know, I was expecting to go out there and you know, get a finish and, you know, put him away quickly. And, I wasn't able to, so it was good to spend that extra time in there and just to get to, you know, have the battle through those bad situations.
When you were talking about the video preparation, you know, watching the videos of the prior fights. So you're saying that didn't mean very much to you because you knew he would be better. So did you really not study it at all? Because I use it to try and make predictions.
Yeah, I mean, if you look up his fights on YouTube, man, it's like, man, some of those fights were from 5 years ago. Yeah, you know, they were just from so long ago. I knew he was just going to be a complete. I mean, I think even his most recent fight before me was a year and a half ago or something like that. You know, in a year and a half at a camp like Rufus Sport, you know, you can change, you know, every month. So I just knew he was going to be a completely different fighter. So I didn't really, I didn't watch. I watched his last fight with the fight he had before mine, but that's the only fight I had ever seen of his.
Cool. All right. I always wonder about stuff like that. I always wonder about, you know, how much stock fighters actually put into the video footage. You know, sometimes you hear a fighter say, you know, he's going to do what I'm going to do, you know, they're like, I don't need to watch it. I don't need to watch any of that stuff because he's just going to have to move based upon what I do. So I was just curious.
Yeah, of course, that's always the game plan, you know, and that was kind of, you know, my game plan as well. But, you know, sometimes, you know, things, it's a fight, you know, sometimes things happen and shit happens, you know, things might happen. And some, you know, as long as you can adapt and overcome it, that's all that matters. And I was able to do that this fight.
I was just curious.
So, Dylan, We talked about it before with Ronnie, the former champion Ronnie Lawrence, looking at putting that together. But that's not signed yet. If that doesn't get signed, of course, I'm not Tim Loy. I'm not the president, so I don't make those calls. Is there anybody out there that you had your eye on? And what are you looking forward to next? When do you want to be back in the cage again? And what are your short-term goals right now?
No, I mean, I don't, I have my eye on, you know, the UFC and the world championship. So, You know, whoever's in line in between then is no big deal to me. So you know, it doesn't matter who wants to come try to get the belt. You know, I'm here for a reason. I'm just here to prove, you know, that I'm the best here until I get pulled up. So it doesn't matter who they come, whether Ronnie wants to or he wants to go somewhere else and someone else. It doesn't matter to me, man.
Well, huge thanks, man.
I told Tim when we first talked, I said he just lines them up and I'll keep taking them out. So
that's what I like about you, man.
Yeah,
that's what I like about you.
Well, real quick, go ahead and give a few shout outs. I mean, this was a huge fight, man, for you to overcome and walk away with that belt. Give some shout outs, some love, social media plugs, everything you got, and we'll let you chill the rest of the night.
Yeah, definitely, man. I want to give a big thanks to you know, everyone that came out to the fight, everyone who was able to buy tickets and you know, buy on Flow and watch on Flow, or you know, to everyone who supports. Had a tremendous amount of support come out for this fight, man. Tons of people reached out to me, and you know, I've had friends come out from all over the country, come out and watch the fight. So you know, it was a you know, a good humbling experience. So I just want to, you know, kind of thank everybody for taking the time out and let everyone know I appreciate that. I want to thank Valor and Flow Combat. Just everyone else who came out, you know, I'm excited to keep defending the title and keep taking out whoever Tim puts on the line.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been Dylan, the future caller. He is the Valor Fights Bantamweight Champion. Have a great night, Dylan.
All right. Take care.
And there you have it. Dylan, the future caller, one of the top prospects in mixed martial arts. And right here in Valor Fights, we can't wait to have him back. But now we have the one and only Kobe the Great Wall on the line, and he's going to talk about his experience back at Valor Fights 41 this past weekend. Kobe, how's it going, man?
What it do, my peoples?
Man, Kobe, what a showing.
Man, we had a great time. I'll be honest, it was a long drive out there. A lot to reflect on traveling up through the Tennessee mountains. On the way back, we actually stopped in Gatlinburg and had a little family time. But, man, we had such a blast at Valor. I will be honest, it's one of the best, you know, put-together shows that we've been to. And I've had over 25 fights in my fighting career, and just a well-put-together show. I love the canvas. I love the cage. That venue was phenomenal. You know, you guys at Valor, y'all do a great job. We had fun, man. We had a blast.
Well, that's good to hear, man. That's we always like to hear that from guys that it's their first time fighting with us, and you know, we were excited to have you, and definitely excited to begin that relationship. You look good, man. You showed a little bit of everything. Got the win with the submission. Showed off some good striking. Got to get that check hook in there. And, you know, your opponent, he said it was the hardest that he's ever been hit. You know, just talk about the fight a little bit and, you know, how did things go pretty much how you expected or any differently?
Yeah, well, I expected him to come in banging. To be honest with you, I wanted to stand and strike a little bit. It's what I do and what I do best. But a lot of people don't realize that I'm just as good or better on the ground than I am standing. So a lot of guys take me down. He came in. He was, the best word to use is jiggly. He came in kind of with a jiggly kind of feint, and it really gave a lot of weight in his game. And then I could really just see in his eyes when he wanted to come in, and he came in and I threw a right hand. I actually threw a jab, and then he was going to throw a right hand. I slipped a check hook in between and then pulled out of the way for his right hand. And he kind of disappeared on me. I'll be honest. He literally dropped out of my field of view, but I knew he wasn't close enough to touch me yet. And when I looked down, he was kind of just, I won't say staggering in front of me, but he was kind of standing there, and then he moved forward. And so I knew I heard him. I felt the left hook land. And I knew he was, I won't say he was in trouble, but I knew that he probably, if he, you know, if he doesn't, you know, if he survives what's about to happen on the ground, he's probably not going to want to stand much. I know he was hurt. But I did see the comment where he said that's the hardest he's ever been hit. And that was just a little check hook. That wasn't anything that had a lot of ass behind it. So just shows that I've got power and I know how to put people down.
Kobe, you know, Tim and I talk a whole lot and we've kind of been chatting back and forth. We were really elated with the card overall, but particularly your performance was great. Another guy looked really good. There in the co-main event, Luis Pena was able to take out Demir Fahapagovic. We're going to talk to him later tonight. But I just got a little word that you might be interested in facing off with Luis Pena at some point. Now, I'm not saying here, but I heard you might have mentioned that you might match up well with Luis Pena.
Yeah, I don't know where you would get that. Probably because it came out of my mouth. But you know, I really liked that matchup. I'm a big fight guy. I can see fighters. I read fighters. I read fights. I knew that was going to be a good fight. Demir, he's a good stand-up guy, but he's got some pretty decent ground. And I know he's strong. Pena, I knew Pena had. He's a good wrestler. But I didn't think he had as good a stand-up as he showed. He defended some good things from a good Thai striker in Demir, and ended up finishing the fight on the ground. But I see, you know, no disrespect to Pena, he's a good guy. I know he brings the heat, but I see some holes in his game. And you know, if we do fight, I'm going to exploit those holes, and I know how to do that. Like I said, I've had almost 25 fights. I had a huge amateur record, a huge amateur career. And we're just getting going as a pro. I take pride in feeling out fights and seeing those holes in guys' game. And that would be a phenomenal fight. I told Tim before we left, I said, hey, if you want to put that 155 belt up, I think it'd be a good fight, me and Pena. And his eyes lit up, and I could just tell that's something that'll probably happen in the future. I'm actually about to leave and go out of town for work for about 2 months. And when I get back, I think there's a rumor of a June card coming around, and we just might have to make that happen. You know, I need another belt on the wall, and I think that'd be a good fight. You know, I actually expected Demir to win that fight, just simply based on his pedigree, but he just got beat that night. I really don't know. I don't know what happened. I'd have to, you know, I'd love to know if it was a mental breakdown, if it was he just got beat. I don't know, but I expected Demir to win. But props to Pena for pulling that fight out. He did a great job. And he's a great fighter, not taking anything from him. But it's a little different ballgame when he steps in there with me.
Tim, two great fighters, but you're a great promoter and a great matchmaker. What do you think about what Kobe's saying here?
Man, you know, I love it. I'm a fan of both guys. I think that you know, we've never had a 155 pro title. We're trying to get our initial pro titles out there, and I can't think of a better matchup from two guys that have won, you know, have won some big fights, and you know, have now been introduced to our you know, our fan base, and they're both such great characters and great fighters. I think it would be awesome, man. And Kobe, you're one of the more like calculated guys we've talked to. Would you agree, Casey? I mean, this guy takes a very calculated approach. I like it, you know. I mean, but a lot of guys I don't think think things through on such a technical level.
Well, absolutely. And you know, I'm interested because, you know, you said Kobe, you said you saw a lot of things out of Luis took a lot of shots in that first round, and essentially from my estimation of what I took from it was that he had a great chin. He was able to you know, roll off roll with some of those shots that Demir was landing, and once Demir, you know, really put the pressure on him, was unable to finish him, he came on in the second. It may have, you know, maybe gassed Demir a little bit, maybe some nerves involved there, but essentially he weathered the storm and then came, you know, into the second full force. Is that something where if you face him and you were to, you know, to deliver those level of shots, that you believe that, you know, Luis can't take what you have to offer out of the gate?
Well, here's the thing. And you guys are actually right. I'd take things on a very calculated approach. Fighting has a lot to do with being tough and being a good fighter, but it also has to do with how smart you are. And I'll be honest that, you know, Demir was landing some decently hard shots. I don't think Demir has a lot of power, but also he wasn't placing them, you know, dead on the money. Pena did a great job of keeping that left hand up. So every time Demir threw that overhand, it landed on, Pena's glove. Yeah, it hit him in the face, but his glove was up, which is props to Luis Pena for having that hand up and knowing that the overhand was coming. But there were just some holes in what I saw. But he is tough. The kid's got a chin. He is tough. But there's some things that I saw that can be exploited, and could change the tide, for sure, without giving too much away. having secrets is part of the fight game, and that's the one that if I fight the kid, that's not a secret I'm going to give up just yet. I'll tell you after the fight's over.
How much of your family did you bring up here?
Do what now?
How much of your family did you bring? It looked like you had a pretty good size chunk of the crowd.
Well, we had my wife was there. My old lady was there. My dad was there. I had two people that were sponsors. One of my sponsors, he was there. And then one of my corners, his wife was there. So I think five total from my crew. Josh Cumby brought, I think, five or six.
Okay.
And then Thomas Woolley brought probably five or six. So just between the three fighters, we probably had maybe 15 or so. But okay. It's a long ways up there, man. It was about 4 hours and 45 minutes. 5 hours. This show that's pretty close. I won't say exactly where it's at. I heard the rumor, but let's just say that if it's a lot more local, you can expect a lot more people. I fought here in Kennesaw on just a Muay Thai fight card, and I sold, I think, like 12 VIP tables. So I got a lot of people that can come that's locally. Nice. So that's why I'm really looking forward to a local show. If you guys bring it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to say I can see why. I mean, I'm kind of a Kobe fan now. I mean, I've gotten to know you a little bit, you know, texting you back and forth. You seem like a kind of dude I could just chill with, you know, and you're very professional. Yeah. You're professional. I can tell you that you're a hard worker. You're calculated. And, like, it seems like you've got a lot of pieces together in your game where most people allow these holes to creep in. It seems like you're becoming a really complete fighter, and that's what I like to see. And I dig your attitude, man, and just kind of the flavor that is Kobe, man. I'm excited. I can't wait to see you fight again.
One of the things that, you know, when I first started training and fighting, a good friend of mine that started coaching me, his name's Colin Smith. He had fought for a few years and was finishing his master's at Georgia Southern University. He started training with me, and we started, you know, traveling, training at gyms. The first thing he said was, if you want to do this seriously, you don't need to go pro for anywhere from 5 to 8 years, and you need to have a minimum of like 10 to 12 amateur fights in just MMA, plus all the boxing, plus Muay Thai. And I really took it to heart. I mean, I had 16 amateur MMA fights. I had 4 amateur Thai fights. And I did tons of grappling through the years. So those are the times as an amateur, that's the time when you make mistakes. That's the time when you have, you know, figure out the weight cut, figure out the diet, figure out if this happens, what do you do? You know, you put yourself in bad positions or you take certain fights to learn. You know, amateur is where you learn. And I think a lot of guys don't do that. They have 5 or 6 fights, they go pro, and then, you know, they're still learning. I mean, I said I had almost 20 fights. As an amateur, I've got most everything figured out. I don't have it all figured out, but I've got most everything figured out. So now as a pro, it's another day. You know, if my weight is here on this day, I know exactly what to do, when to do. It's not anything I need to figure out. And I think that, you know, goes to credit, you know, how well I've done.
I know Tim likes to hear that. I know he likes to hear that.
Well, Kobe, again, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure having you here. Of course, the greatest, possibly the greatest nickname in mixed martial arts right now, Kobe the Great Wall. And of course, the character that's behind it is even more so. It was a pleasure having you there at Valor Fights 41. We, you know, really look forward to having you back. We're very excited. And of course, we look forward to announcing more dates on the Valor lineup here soon. And so of course you'll definitely be involved in one of those. Have a great night. But before we close you out, go ahead and give your shout outs, your love, and your social media plugs.
You know, I want to thank everybody. I just put a post up on Facebook for this last fight. You know, thank you guys at Valor for having me. It was an awesome opportunity, awesome experience. We'd love to keep working with you guys. Russ Cassidy, he was actually there. Thank you so much for everything you do, Russ. He's always with me. He's always, you know, helping and going to fights. And one day he's always said one day we'll go to Vegas and we'll fight under the lights, and we'll definitely do it. Al Chapman, all the guys in Statesboro, Georgia. Amy, thank you so much for everything you do. All my guys up here at Striker Fight Center. That's always grinding with me. We actually got fights this weekend. I got 2 guys fighting this weekend. I just left the sauna actually just a bit ago. Alex Mosley, Down to Earth Landscape, and all you guys, man. Thanks so much. Facebook is Kobe the Great Wall. Instagram and Snapchat is KW02648. And my Twitter, which if you guys check my Twitter out, I just actually called out Dan Blitzerian. He supposedly wants to fight MMA. It's Kobe-Wall. So y'all go check it out.
Yeah, I saw that, Mr. Instagram, right?
On my Snapchat. No, I called him out on Snapchat.
I gotcha. Cool.
So well, he's the guy that's always got all the girls around. He's a professional poker player. He's made all this money. Oh, supposedly, he wants to do an MMA fight now. He wants to do an MMA fight, so I just saw it.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. Well,
we should pitch that to Brian, Casey.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll smash that kid. He's not a kid, he's a grown man, but still. Anyways, you guys have fun, man. I know you all got another guest. Y'all take it easy, and we'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure. Man. Thank you so much, Kobe.
It's a pleasure.
See you guys.
That was Kobe the Great Wall, a tremendous performance last Saturday night at Valor Fights 41, but now it's Luis the Beast Pena on the line right now. Of course, we also saw him at Valor Fights 41, big win in the co-main event. How's it going tonight, Luis?
I'm doing great, actually. I just got home from eating dinner.
Very cool. I'm sure you had to skip a few dinners leading up to the fight to make the weight and everything. Man, what a showcase. Of course, your fight with Demir started out pretty rocky, man. I mean, he came at you. He was landing a few shots, but you were headstrong. You told forward. A great fight. And then, of course, in the second round, you really opened up and did what you do, man. Big win by triangle choke submission. Talk about the fight and the whole experience at Valor Fights 41.
Oh, man, it was a great experience. In the fight, I actually didn't expect him to come out and engage the way he did. I've watched Demir a lot, and I thought he was going to be a little bit more methodical, which I thought would allow me to, like, use my range to pick him apart. But he kind of threw that out of the window for this fight because he knew that's what I wanted him to do, and kind of just did what he needed to do and explode on me, kind of wait outside my range and explode on me to come in. And it just took me a little while to get the timing down and the range down on him doing that. And then I just realized at that point, you know, it was going to be, let's just go ahead and test the waters on the ground. And then by the time we got it to the ground, I think he had blown his wad so much trying to knock me out standing up that he had nothing left for me, energy wise on the ground.
Were you surprised? Oh, I'm sorry. Were you surprised at all by the switching of stances and that right hook? Because he was leading with that right hook a lot.
You know, actually, not really. One of my training partners, he was my corner, Lucas Clay, actually throws that. He's very, he switches stances a lot and throws the right hook a lot, leads with that right hook a lot. And I'm used to it, but I'm not used to it the way Demir was coming and, like, just jumping in with it. Like, Lucas reaches more, and Demir kind of jumped in with it. And it just caught me off guard because, I don't know, I didn't expect him to use kind of the same advantages that I use on orthodox fighters that, you know, as a southpaw fighter.
Hmm. Okay. I actually have a lot of questions for you, man. Tim, do you want to go ahead and hit him up before I...
Well, yeah, man. First off, I just want to say it was a blast having you. And, you know, one of the things, you know, that we kind of pride ourselves on here as we grow and we all just kind of grow is the ability to put on matches with guys that are just from completely different regions that you wouldn't necessarily get to see them fight each other unless it were on a huge stage like UFC or something. So, you know, in this one, we got to see Knoxville versus, you know, the St. Louis area, which is awesome. And we got to introduce you to our fans. And I feel like you made a lot of fans out here. You know, I'm certainly a fan. It was just a great character, a great fighter. And we loved having you out here. And I think that, you know, obviously, you know, you've got aspirations of making it to the UFC, and we hope that you do. We hope that we can help get you there. That's kind of our thing now, is we're wanting to propel guys, you know, to that level, you know, and to do that, I feel like we have to, as a promotion, emerge from just being considered just a niche, you know, only East Tennessee fighters, you know. And so that's why, you know, we're bringing in guys like yourself and guys from out of the area to showcase those guys against talent that's not just from their own region. So it's a really cool thing to be able to do that. And, you know, we were just talking to another guy that won the same evening, Saturday night. And, you know, just kind of playing, you know, a fantasy matchmaker and whatnot as we're on here, we were thinking it might be an awesome fight with you and Kobe Wall, maybe for the first ever Valor lightweight title.
Take the fight.
I mean, I watched that fight. That would be a great, I would totally be awesome. Interested. Dude looks really, really tough. Looks like a guy's not going to break hard easily. You know, I'm always down to fight anybody, and the Valor lightweight title, you know, I saw that belt, those Valor belts look pretty. I wouldn't mind one, you know, on my trophy case. So I'm down to make that fight happen.
You know what, man? After talking to you as well, now you guys are two of the most like technical, thinking fighters we've spoken to. I mean, both of you guys were very, very technical and calculated in how you broke down your fight. You know, it's very refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I've always approached everything I've done, from wrestling on to fighting. It was just very like technical and analytical. That's how I feel like I do so well in my fights, is I'm able to do that very, very fast, like very fast and very in the moment during a fight.
Alan, go for it, man.
Yeah. I've never had to eat my words so many times before. I really appreciate this. how satisfying is it to get to do this again?
Well, okay, I'm not going to lie. It was pretty satisfying knowing that everyone kind of, I didn't think everyone kind of was counting me out. They all knew I was tough, but I think everyone just being, with Demir being as successful as he has and him being that guy that no one's really seen been beat and tested like that, I think everyone was expecting him to just go out there and do what Demir does, you know?
Okay, and I had to, out of respect to Dahmer's family, I have to call him Dahmer because I don't want his dad calling me up asking me while I'm calling him Demir. So
if I can interject real quick there, you know, that's another one of the cool things about just finding new talent from out of our region is, like, I knew that wasn't going to be a cakewalk for Demir. Casey knew that wasn't going to be a cakewalk for Demir. You know, in the people that are in the know, knew that this was going to be a very tough fight for both of you guys. So, you know, obviously if you're not known in this region, people are, you know, people know who Demir is. And, so they're going to pick him because, you know, he's been wrecking fools out this way, you know. But that being said, I think you definitely made a lot of fans and a lot of believers out here, you know, Saturday.
And that's what I try to do, man. I try, like, everywhere I go, I try to make fans of my fighting style out there and put it on the line.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can include me in that. I was really, so you and Kobe, I feel like I kind of really click with you guys. I feel like I could just sit down and chill and have a conversation with you. You guys are very intelligent, professional. Even when I walked up to you and I shared that picture with you of me after I made the prediction and wrote all the, let me get back to that. So I said that Dahmer was going to win in the second round by submission. Did you submit him in the second round on purpose just to make it worse?
Oh, no, that's just one of those things where, like, I'm always going for the finish, so it just happened to happen in the second round.
Okay, I mean, I could ask you so many questions. I'll just, one more. When did you start to feel the tide? Because in my opinion, Dahmer took the first round. When did you feel the tide start to turn? When did you kind of be like, uh-oh, or not uh-oh, but, you know, I think that, you know, I got him now.
Looking across from him between the first and second round, I knew it was over. I knew I had it. I knew it was
he gassed? What was it?
Like the look on it, the look in his eyes, man, just as I, cause I was sitting there kind of bouncing on my feet, ready to go. I'm the type of guy that like, as soon as the bell rings, you know, I'm across the cage trying to fight. And I could see that was like worrying him. I could see he was a little more tired than I was. And he knew that I was about to be right in his face. And that's when I was like, all right, now I've got this. I just got to play it safe and wait for my opening and take it.
Okay. Well, very cool. Luis, man, it has been a pleasure. Of course, I met you first when you showed up at the gym, you know, to cut some weight. And then, of course, the next morning, I told you in the post-fight interview that I picked against you and that I had to eat my words. But, you know, man, it really was a great experience getting to know you and your team and everybody. And that's what this sport's all about, really, and what really Valor for, Fights is all about. Real quick, go ahead and give everyone, you know, all the love and the shout-outs to everybody that they help you get there. And then also, of course, your social media plugs and anything out, you know, any other shout outs you need to give. And we'll let you have the rest of the night off.
All right, man. I just want to first give a big shout out to my sponsor, Summit Sign and Graphics, and Andy Herdlicka. Without him helping me out, I wouldn't have been able to make everything happen to make this fight happen. You know, all the stuff behind the scenes, the blood work, medicals, all that stuff. Without him sponsoring me, I wouldn't have been able to make all that happen. So I want to give a huge, huge shout out to him. If you need any type of advertising needs in the St. Louis metro area, hit him up. Of course, a huge shout out to my teammates, Lucas Clay and Cortavius Romeus. They drove down 9 hours both ways with me to that fight, cornered me with that fight. Some of my coach, he drove 9 hours, Mike Rogers. Just a huge, huge shout out to those guys for you know, having my back in that experience. And a huge shout out to the rest of my team, you know, at St. Charles MMA for helping me get ready. If you want, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at YoungMetro501. And then on Facebook, my fan page is Luis the Beast Pena. And you can add me as a friend, Luis Antonio Pena.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Luis. Again, we are you know, so excited to have you as part of the Valor Fights roster and look forward to seeing you soon. Have a great night.
You guys, too. Have a great night. Thank you. Thanks, I appreciate, Luis. You know, being a part of Valor Fights now.
Well, hey, we got now, again. You know, the good thing about Tennessee licenses is they're good for 2 years, so you're set for a while now.
Sweet. Nice. Come back. Let's do it. Let's make some interesting fights happen.
All right. Talk soon, my man.
All right, see you later,
Tim. A big thanks to Luis Pena, a tremendous performance. But now we have the one and only Asian Persuasion, Jason King, on the line. Jason, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, sir. I just got done getting cleaned up for the night and ready to start back up tomorrow.
Well, good. Have you put on, you know, 10, 12 pounds? I know I saw you at the weight cut. Are you eating good after that big victory?
I am. But one thing, I don't know if this happens to everybody, but it at least happens with me. So I weighed in at, I think 169. I was already 183 by the fight. And honestly, right now, I'm only walking at about 187. So I gained most of the weight back that I'm going to gain by the fight, and then after that, my metabolism is kind of taking care of me for these next couple of days, but that's about to go out the window. So, you know, I do have another fight coming up, so, you know, I'm going to enjoy the next, you know, day or two, and then after that, I'm going to get back on the grind and back to the clean eating.
Well, before we get to the next fight, let's talk about this one. You know, you got the win through some vicious elbows. Just talk about the fight. Talk about, you know, to go about how you thought it was going to go. I think in previewing it, we all kind of gathered that he was going to, you know, definitely want to get the takedown.
Oh yeah, for sure. This fight is the only fight I've ever had that, I mean, literally nothing went outside of what the game plan was. I mean, there was no X factor thrown into it. I mean, the fight started, I think, for about like 30 or 40 seconds, nothing happened because he was keeping such like an insane distance away from me. Like, I mean, I know I've got pretty long legs and I can kick far, but I mean, he was so far away from me that I couldn't even get near him with kicks. And every time I'd step forward, he'd step back. And I kind of knew that he was waiting for me to kind of rush in and, you know, go for a takedown or so he could get a takedown, something like that. So I was patient with him, just like I was patient, like the game plan was for about the first minute. And eventually he shot in, which is exactly what we thought he was going to do. And then, the knees, the elbows, everything I did was just literally the past, 8 weeks of game planning for specifically for Suter. So like I said, this is the only fight I've ever had where it went exactly according to what the game plan was for the fight.
You know, Dwayne Finley from Flow Combat, he was tweeting all night long about the event. And, of course, he was throwing out there that the Travis Brown-style elbows, those little short elbows there in the clinch. Is that something you've been preparing for? I've not seen you pull those off to that degree before. But, man, those really put a halt to David Suter's offense or his game in general, man. He simply crumbled to it. Is that something that you prepared for?
It's something that, where this is kind of, if any amateur fighters or younger, greener fighters are listening, this is just an instance where it pays to show up to class, whether you have a fight camp or not. Those elbows were actually something that I learned, I think it was from a Justin Fisher fight back when, Justin Fisher was fighting. I was helping him get ready for a fight and he was doing the short elbows and I just kind of picked it up because, I was in class with him. So, it wasn't necessarily part of the plan, but it is something that I have drilled before. The plan was because we knew that he'd want to pressure me under the cage. We also knew that he didn't have the biggest gas tank. Was either to stall him out or to hit the three-quarter Nelson and continue to knee him. But at that point, he had dropped so low on my legs that I couldn't quite get the bite necessary for a three-quarter Nelson, but then he left his head totally exposed to the elbows, and it just kind of dawned on me at that moment, like, hey, I've done this before. And sure enough, after the first couple of them, I felt his knees buckle, and then after that, it was just a really simple matter of just getting off the cage and finishing the job.
Well, we hadn't seen the elbows like that before, but you also probably haven't fought anybody that was just I guess just dead set on trying to get a takedown.
It was
takedown or bust.
So, it was just announced it's going to be you and Brandon Bell, Corbin, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Valor versus Warrior, which is really cool. There's a lot of stuff that's going to go into that. Tim and I have been talking about it between the jerseys, it's going to be a really neat venture. And really excited that you're part of that. What do you think about Brandon Bell?
I looked him up a little bit. Just because the fight's over, obviously doesn't mean I've stopped training. I was at KMA last night. We went over the game plan, what we're going to plan to do to this guy. And, honestly, not to say this as a good or a bad thing, he seems a lot like Suter, just probably more experienced and more technical. He's a shorter guy that's probably, physically, stronger than me in the sense that he can lift more, as far as functional muscle. Not so sure about that. He's a strong, stocky guy, and I'm not going to say my game plan is the same, but it does, there are similarities between him and Suter. And I just, people kept asking me this last fight, what I'm going to do to this guy, what I'm going to do to him. Really, I'm going to have fun. My best performances always occur when I'm enjoying what I do. And I plan on showing everybody, all the people that show up to the Kentucky fight, that is, who I am. I'm just a guy that's going out there and I'm having fun and I'm loving what I'm doing. And I think when I am able to do that, the results speak for themselves.
I got a question for you, Jason.
Yeah.
First of all, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It was a long day today. No KMA today, but I did get, some strength and conditioning in and, just a long day at work, but a good day at work. So
that's what I wanted to kind of touch on. I find your work ethic, because I'm around KMAA and I go around the gyms And, you know, I find your work ethic, you know, it inspires me. I think you even wrote something about, you know, like I felt so like lazy because you were working at, like we were both sick. I'm just pushing a button on my camera and you're sparring, you know, for hours. And I'm whining about pushing a button on my camera while you're in there, you know, mixing it up. And not only that, but it's kind of a two-parter here. I'd like to get your take on advice to the fighters that are bummed out right now because they lost their last fight. Because I saw you take a loss and then bounce right back to, in my eyes, like it never happened. And you just got right back to it. And then you just, you know, you really smashed the guy that, you know, that you just fought now. Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. You know, to say that I bounced back like it never happened, I mean, obviously it did happen. I did lose. I did lose by knockout. And, you know, that wasn't that long ago. But what I would say to any fighter who is upset at a loss is two things. First off, it's okay to be upset at the loss. It's totally natural to be upset at the loss. At the end of the day, it's not my job to win or to lose a fight. My job is to do my best. So, you know, if I go out there and I give it 100% and I put everything on the line, you know, winning and losing is not part of what I can control. The only thing I can control is, did I do my best? So, and the answer to that, you know, for me is yes. You know, in the Wesley Golden fight, the fight that I lost that fight. I'm not going to make excuses for it. I'm not going to say, you know, it was a lucky punch or whatever. He caught me and it was a loss. I accept that loss. But at the end of the day, I did the best that I could do. You know, the story, I mean, this is common knowledge. I don't remember the second, you know, large two thirds of that fight, you know, due to a concussion, but I did the best that I could do with what I have and I have nothing to hang my head about. So whenever I say bounce back, I don't even think of it as a bounce back. I think of it as, you know, two separate events. You know, what's the past is the past, and what's the future is the future. But all I can do is all I can change is what's happening right now. And when you saw me on Saturday, that was me changing what I could change right now in the present. And, you know, I just went out there, I had fun, I did my best. And as long as you're doing those two things, you have nothing to hang your head about. And you should just jump right back in there because it's fun. It's because you love what you do. Mm-hmm. And because you want another opportunity to show the world what your best is.
That's awesome. And I just want people to know, I read your posts on Facebook for inspiration. You know, like I like to see your work ethic. And it pushes me.
Well, I'm glad it does something for you.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Again, one of the you know, the favorites of the Valor Fights roster because you're so exciting. And again, you know, we've been with you through the ups and the downs. You're definitely on a big upswing right now. Real quick, give us you know, your social media plugs, your love, your shout out, everything that you want to say. You know, talking about Valor Fights 41 and who got you there.
Yeah, of course. So Valor Fights 41, I'd like to thank all of my gyms, all of my sponsors, Knoxville Martial Arts Academy, all my coaches and teammates there. Obviously, I could have never even been in this position without you guys. Thank you to Frankie's Body Shop, Fit Tech McCoy Padilla for the help with strength and conditioning. Thank you to NutriShop Knoxville, Mad Tatter Studios, Just Heart Apparel. All of you guys for all the support and love that you guys give me. Thank you, Valor Fights, for the opportunity to showcase, you know, my skills, to do what I love in front of an audience. Without you guys, I wouldn't, you know, be able to do that, especially in, you know, my old stomping grounds in Elizabethan. So thank you guys so much for that. And as far as social media goes, guys, I'm most active on Facebook and Instagram. You can reach me on Facebook at Asian Persuasion MMA. I promise you I'm the only one there. And then on Instagram, you can reach me at Asian Persuasion MMA as well. And yeah, I would love to, you know, if you guys have any questions or concerns, you can feel free to leave me a message on either of those platforms and I'll try my best to answer back.
All right. Thank you so much, Jason. The Asian Persuasion, Jason King, always a great character and a tremendous competitor. Have a great night.
See you guys.
Take it easy, Jason.
Big thanks to Jason King. But now on the line, we have Chase Boutwell fighting out of American Top Team down there in Macon, Georgia. Chase, what a tremendous performance.
I appreciate it, man.
So we had a last-minute replacement there. Aaron Milloway's grandfather passed. Condolences to them. And we were able to scramble around at the last minute and pull a rabbit out of our hat. And Charles Chandler, from American Top Team in Asheville, North Carolina, stepped up. Big props to him for stepping up on short notice like that. Much appreciated there. And this guy was tough, man. You know, he didn't have a great record coming in, but you know, it was obvious he could. I messaged you the night before. I was like, I heard he can wrestle a little bit, and he could. He definitely could. Yeah. He picked you up over his head there and slammed you. And I was like, oh wow, you know. And he was definitely tough, but you know, you grabbed that triangle there, and you were relentless with it.
Yeah, man. I figured after I heard about you saying he was wrestling, you know, that the game plan would change, because the game plan with Aaron was to keep him on the feet and just pick him apart. And you said that Michael was a wrestler, Charles was a wrestler. I knew it was going to change, and I figured he'd probably take me down. So I knew the submissions were probably going to be there from his previous fight. So I figured I'd just look for those.
What did you think about, you know, it being your first MMA fight? Was it any different? You know, we've talked a lot about how, you know, you're one of the more seasoned guys to be making their debut at 18 years old. How, you know, you've already been wrestling and doing jiu-jitsu and kickboxing with us. And, you know, just you've been in there already. Did that make a difference in how in your nerves at all, or, you know, just to the point where you weren't phased by the lights and everything because you've already been under them? Or, you know, was it because it was MMA, it was different? Were they still there?
Man, you know, it was different. Whenever I kickboxed, I had it was almost like claustrophobic. I had all that gear on, man, and that really made me nervous when I kickboxed and fight. But once I just had the MMA gloves on, I could slow down and catch my breath, and you got an extra minute, man, I was like really calm, and that almost worried me because I was almost too calm. And sometimes that's a bad thing, but it turned out well, and I felt more comfortable in there with just MMA gloves on, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
So is it just the MMA gloves, or is it that the idea that you're not so much contained, you know, or constrained by the rules? Meaning, you're a great kickboxer, and you always, you know, put on a very dominant performance. But in the end, if you run into trouble in a kickboxing fight, it's kickboxing. In MMA, it allows you to kind of open up and use all of your attributes and get that guy out of there. If he's got a tough chin, you can get him down and put him away. Does that, in your mindset, does it help your nerves going into a fight?
Oh yes, tremendously. You know, you figure somebody's better than you on one aspect, you know, you're probably better than them on the other. So that makes it, you know, a lot less, you know, nerve wracking.
Were you, go ahead, Alan, please.
Okay. Yeah. You were saying that you're more comfortable with fighting with more options. Is that kind of what you were saying? Or is it just that gear was constraining you?
Both, really. I mean, when you got headgear on, man, all that heat gets trapped inside, and you kind of your peripherals are cut off. It makes almost like, you know, too much. Like it's just too much protection to where it becomes hurtful, to where it doesn't help at all.
It's restricting your movement. You feel that way?
Yeah.
You feel, whether it is or not, you feel like it is, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
We've talked about this not so much on the podcast, but it's been a kind of a debate for a while, you know, with the headgear, you know, on amateur kickboxing. And now, you know, guys that are under 18, I guess I could still see it maybe, but, what do you think? Do you feel like it is a safety, it does improve the safety, or if it's more of a hindrance? I've always been on the side that it's more of a hindrance with vision and not being able to see from your peripheral and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the headgear adds like an extra, what, like an inch and a half or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's an inch and a half that they can be further away. You still get hit with a shot. So it's more shots you're taking if you think about it.
I've never really thought of it like that, but you bring up a good point. The argument I've always heard is the lack of, it takes away your peripheral vision, and of course the only thing it really stops is cuts, a superficial thing that you can still get a concussion, from taking more shots, and it just means that you won't be cut. So, and that's not really the most of our worries.
Yeah, exactly. You can't really see as well, when you're wearing the headgear, so that makes it, that's just another factor. I hate wearing it, man. The only time I wear it is during hard sparring. That is the only time I wear it, which is only one or two times a count.
So you had the impressive win here, against a guy that was, a seasoned fighter, and they've awarded you with a UMAF berth. And I was talking to you earlier this week about that. And now, actually, with Hunter Thomas falling out with an injury, who was our 135 entry for the Nationals in May, now it looks like you're going to be taking over that spot. Talk about that a little bit, and the decision to do 35 instead of 25.
Right. The decision to do 35, obviously, would probably have to be done because it's, you weigh in, like you said, three consecutive days, and me trying to do that at 25 would be impossible. Trying to cut at least 5 pounds of water a night, that would just be way too much for my body. But, man, I'm looking forward to it. I like kind of the old school, it's not just one fight. You gotta fight, more than one time, in 48 hours or whatever the time period is. But, man, I'm excited for it. I like the idea of it, Nobody's really going to be weight cutting too much, like you said, either, so it's going to be natural 135ers. So I got a good attitude towards that. I'm ready for it.
Now, Chase, let's talk a little bit about your training for the our listeners that aren't familiar with you. You are a wonder kid of sorts. Of course, starting originally with Ben Harrison at Shield Systems there in Knoxville, then you moved down to Macon, Georgia, and you trained there with Bubby at Rush MMA. But you also represent American Top Team, and a lot of guys from Rush MMA are also representing American Top Team. I know Bubby's close relationship with Cole Miller. I watched all that happen throughout the years. Talk about your training and exactly what that means when they see on the roster that you're Rush MMA / American Top Team. Talk about what that means. Are you running camps down in Coconut Creek as well? What's going on with your training?
So basically, when you see Rush MMA, that was our gym now. That was what the original name was, what it started out as. It was Rush MMA. But knowing Bubby and Cole, they're ATT affiliates. So whenever Cole or, Bubby and Cole are in there all the time. So to be an ATT affiliate, you kind of have to have connections with ATT headquarters. And to be an ATT affiliate, from my understanding, what Bubby has told me, that if you train at any ATT anywhere in the United States that's affiliated, official, it's connected to the headquarters, you can go to any ATT and doors are open. So that's basically what it means. So whenever you see ATT, if it doesn't say ATT Coconut Creek, Florida, it can still be any other gym anywhere else in the United States, but it's ATT affiliated, which means it's kind of like a branch of the gym. And they can have different names, but it really comes down to the trainers, who they know, and that makes it affiliated with the headquarters.
Gotcha. So have you been down to Coconut Creek at all? Have you been doing anything as far as your camps down there?
No. All my camps are done down here, but there's no need. I got guys like Quentin Culpepper, Lathan Lawson, those big guys, man, they help me out every day. So the camp is pretty much made here. I got 5 or 6 guys I can go with any day. So, I'm pretty much set down here.
So speaking of Quentin Culpepper, a teammate of yours, he's going to be main eventing our next show, Valor 42, coming up April 15th. And now, I don't know for sure that you're familiar, but being from the area up here and kind of being tied in with BJJ and whatnot, I would assume you're somewhat familiar with Haig. What do you think about that matchup?
Man, I think it's going to be fireworks. A lot of people sleep on Quentin's jiu-jitsu, man, but he's a high-level purple belt, man. I think
he just showed it in the last belt. But
yeah, if he Quentin does gi. Man, he'll do gi and he does no gi, and you know, I know Steven, he's a really good, I don't know if he's a brown or a black belt. He's a brown belt, right?
Yeah, he's a brown belt right now.
Right. And I know him and Nick Gertz had that awesome MMA grappling. Like, it was MMA, but, man, it was basically a grappling match. That was exciting. But I watched that fight, man. I think Clinton's going to pull it out, but I don't know if Steven can take him down, you know? That's going to be the key, I think.
I think it's going to be an exciting one for the fans.
Absolutely.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
Well, Chase, we saw big things out of you at Valor Fights 41. Of course, you're going to be back at the Nationals, a big deal there. Real quick, go ahead and give your shout outs. Of course, we want to know how to find you on social media. Give me your social media plugs. And then, you know, anything else that you want to give the listeners so that they know more about the Chase Boutwell.
All right. Well, first off, I got to shout out my mom and dad. They've been there every step of the way. My coach, Bubby Mitchell, Quentin Culpepper, Lathan Lawson, both of them helped me out every day through this last camp. Homer Mangrum, me and him went through the same thing every day, man, grinding when we were on that diet. And if you want to follow me on social media, my Instagram name is kind of funny, but it's Cha Cha Bum Bum Boutwell. And then on Facebook, it's just my name, and you can either friend request me on my personal page or follow my athlete page. And they both just Chase Boutwell.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Have a great night, Chase. And again, a huge congrats on a big debut back at Valor Fights 41. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, that just about does it for another episode of the Valor Hour. A huge thanks to Tim Loy and also to Alan Poole. What a tremendous recap of Valor Fights 41. Remember to subscribe to the Valor Hour on Stitcher, on iTunes, and check it out. Rate us. Catch us on our social media, Twitter, on Facebook, everything Valor Fights. Thanks so much for joining us. And we will see you on the next episode of the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. This is a fabulous sports big quick fix on Radio Influence.
Well, how could it be? First, I thought, okay, Kyrie Irving's got this thing and he thinks the earth is flat. It's okay. Well, now Shaq believes that the earth is flat. Now, I don't want to say anything, but this guy's got a PhD from Barry University. I know it used to be a girls' college, but it's not a real girls' college anymore, as they used to call it. He has a PhD from education. And he believes that the world is flat. And he said, well, I drive from Florida to California and I don't see me going up and down a lot. And I don't understand why the buildings don't fall over. And I'm just, you know, I think to myself, what is it that makes it? He said, well, anything you see, they can manipulate it and you can see it on your phone. I don't know about you, but I remember when I didn't have a phone. And I sort of have a feeling you remember when you didn't have a phone either. One time they brought, when he was first in Orlando, his first year, and they brought him up. It was the first time they were coming to see Seattle. And I was there and they let me go down and talk with him. And I sat next to him. If you can just imagine, my head was like at his waist. And I put my foot next to his, and he had a foot that was like 23, 24, and I've got like a 7.5 foot. I mean, it was like 3 times the size of me. It was just amazing because, you know, guys are big, but this guy was enormous. But Shaq is telling everybody that he believes that the world is flat. And I'm thinking, well, if you go to California and then you go to China, do you think that does it end there? Or can you go on to Asia? And can you go to Europe? and then you can go back to the U.S.? Or do you think it ends there and you have to turn around and go back to California? I get very confused about this. I'm not really confused. They're the ones that are idiots.
The Fabulous Sports Babe can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.